Welcome to Bimmercast number 33. You are listening to our ALMS show. We're going to be recapping the Petit Le Mans and BMW's win of the manufacturer's title and the team title. We're going to be talking about the 1 Series LCI and a little bit of random BMW news. Stay tuned. Oh, and we have a special guest. Stay tuned. Okay, gentlemen, it is fantastic to be joined by a guest tonight. We've got Matt Adams, who was with us a few shows ago when we were recapping LMS at Road America. Mm-hmm. And today it is, of course, Road Atlanta. So welcome, Matt. And, of course, we have Michael as well. Both you guys were at the final race of the year, and you guys got to witness BMW winning the championship.
Yeah, it was fantastic to be there.
Good time on many levels.
So, I mean, before we dive into it, a huge congratulations to the team. I think it is quite a coup for a second year team. This is a team that's been around for, less than 2 years, and has effectively won both of the titles that really count in LMS, in the GT series, and I would say the series, again, that also counts more than anything. This is, of course, production-based cars, lots and lots of rules, and they beat Porsche, Corvette, Ferrari, and Jaguar, although I like to think that Jaguar beat themselves.
Yeah, they did.
I've been accused of jinxing Jaguar, but seriously, I have money down on every race when their engine blows up.
Yeah, it was within the first second hour this time?
Yeah, it was. It was right on cue. Head blows up. Bye. You start with crap, you end up with crap. That's all I have to say about that.
Wow. Well, tell us what you really think, Michael. No, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, Jaguar aside, it was an incredibly competitive season. I mean, you've got Porsche and Flying Lizard team and all the other different teams. You have Ferrari, which was really, really impressive this year. And, mm-hmm. of course, you have BMW, which came on strong. Only won one race, which is pretty amazing. Only one race this year, yet they were fantastic. And then you've got Corvette, clearly not the team they once were, but historically another great team.
Well, certainly there's something to be said about that, but, you know, not to understate it, or overstated rather, BMW was on the podium every race but this one.
Yeah, irony. What do you think, Michael? I mean, is this a well-earned win by BMW?
Oh, sure, definitely a well-earned win. I mean, you come into the last race, three teams are all within striking distance of taking home that championship, and you know, in racing, you have not only the cars and winning, but you have strategy and you have actually completing races. And you know what? That last splash of fuel, Ferrari didn't put enough fuel in. That's their own damn fault, you know?
It's pretty amazing, actually, that Ferrari, A, didn't figure that out, and B, that so many teams were in the running for that final race. I mean, incredible when you think about it.
Yeah, considering you have a bunch of races before, you know, this is the ninth race, and for everyone to be in contention for this final race is just amazing. I think the only thing that wasn't up for grabs was the Drivers' Championship, which went to Bergmeister and Long. But aside from that, everything was pretty much up for grabs.
So what do you guys think about, I mean, you've been to a few LMS races this year. I mean, what do you think about the team just as far as preparedness, professionalism? I mean, what have you guys seen? I mean, give us sort of that inside look into what we don't see on TV.
They are absolutely consummate professionals, without a question. Everybody knows what they need to do. It's hard to compare without being this close to other teams, but they seem to be right on top of every detail that they needed. And they didn't hesitate to take care of what they needed to when the 90 car went out. Within 60 seconds of realizing the starter was bad, they had the car up and they were pulling the back off right in the pit. It was incredible to watch.
Yeah, everyone has a purpose, and they're really good at what they do. Each person on the team has their own job as far as RLR goes. And beyond that, you have BMW Motorsport engineers from Germany that are helping out and saying, well, it could be this problem. We've seen this in the past with our cars in Europe. And, you know, throwing back information like that. Or simply, we made this minor tweak, and your car will go faster, we promise. You know, and you have the Dunlop engineers trying their best to make a tire. I guess that's the way I'm going to say that. And, yeah, I mean, they're there. They're definitely there. They're taking measurements. They're trying different compounds. They have, you know, these formulas that they're calculating, the tire guys. And, you know, they're doing the best they can. I guess they, the easiest way to put it is that they are way behind as far as tire development goes in the whole package of the tire. They're really doing a great job with the compounds, but there's more to tires than compounds. You have belts and not, you know, all those things going on too. And I think that Michelin's involvement for decades, you know, they show a little bit more fine quality, I guess you can say, in craftsmanship. They have an upper hand in that area, where Dunlop's compounds are actually improving, and improving so much so that BMW is able to make less tire changes and get more life out of their tires and speed up pit stops because of the compounds. So they have that advantage.
And it also speaks to the quality of the car itself that the BMW is running, that they are as competitive as they are, that they took the championship this year on what some might say is an inferior tire to the rest of the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the car is a tank. You know, the one flaw that they had was actually from the transmission, which has nothing to do with BMW Motorsport or BMW or RLR designing. It's a standard off-the-shelf racing transmission that pretty much all the teams use. So anyone could have the same issue.
It's amazing to me that the teams still use a shift on the floor. And I understand it's a sequential shifter. It seems a little old-fashioned, though. I mean,
it may be, and there may be some changes coming, but we can't discuss those now.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's some changes in the rules that'll influence what happens next year, and there's some changes in where the car is going to possibly be raced that may change some of the.
So one thing, you know, the fact that the transmission, I know it's a sequential 6-speed transmission, but I mean the fact that it shifted on the floor, the sound of it doesn't seem really modern.
It does sound a bit archaic, and it has to do with the rules of, you know, ALMS and the governing body and the GT class. So maybe in the future you'll see a shift to, say, paddles or something like that, but that's all up for debate based on, you know, what the rules are going to be for next season. And, you know, there may be other changes to the cars based on where the cars will race, since they won the Manufacturers Championship. That I think pretty much means that they have a free slot at Le Mans for next season. So if they actually want to race those cars in.
Really? The RLR cars?
Could race at Le Mans. I'm pretty sure that's how that works. If you win the Manufacturers Championships points, if you win Petit Le Mans, or if you win Sebring, you basically get a free bid to race in Le Mans. So there'd be a lot of modifications needed if the cars were actually to race over there. You know, whether or not they complete those, can't say at this time.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting year. This season's been great. My one gripe the whole season is that there's no, you know, M stripes on the cars. Really wish we could see some M stripes on the cars. I don't understand why, you know, the German cars can do it. Why can't our cars have them? I just think it's adds a little bit of history to them.
So beyond the BMW, what other cars were you really impressed with?
personally, I was really impressed with the Peugeots. This is their second year with those cars, or third year going on with the same design. And you think they're a little outdated, but they're not. They're just beasts of cars. They just, and they're so quiet compared to everything else.
You've heard them mention that before. That they really are. They sound, of course, they sound unlike anything else on the grid, apart from maybe the Audis. But they're just, it's just a different experience watching them race.
Yes, and I was the least impressed, actually, with the Audis.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Yeah, I mean, they crashed a bunch of times during practice this week, and they actually took their 24-hour of Le Mans winning car, and I believe they had it with them as a spare because they crashed every single other thing they had. And we watched them swap out the transmissions and the rear transaxles during warm-ups and things like that. And in the race, they, you know, pretty much destroyed the one car. I'm not really sure exactly what happened, but we had heard throughout the pits that they were having issues with their front air dam catching on bumps and just basically shattering into a bazillion pieces. Mm-hmm. So instead of using carbon fiber, they had to use aluminum, and the aluminum bending actually caused more problems. So I was actually just really disappointed in those cars because, you know, Audi has a history of winning at Petit Le Mans and ALMS in general, and it just seems like they've gotten a little lackadaisical and cocky and almost ahead of themselves.
Well, it's really, really interesting because you can't help but feel like there's a shift happening in the top class of prototype racing. I mean, Le Mans this year obviously was won by the Peugeots, Petit Le Mans by the Peugeots, and it wasn't even close, really.
No, it wasn't even close. And that's the other thing. It's like, who else is even competing with those cars?
No one.
Nothing we see here in ALMS in the U.S.
You know, I think that's one of the problems. I love LMS racing, but I love the GT class. That's what I watch it for. And yeah, because BMW is involved, it's important to me. But even if you took BMW out of the equation, you know, it's still interesting. You've got Ferrari, Porsche, Corvette, Jaguar, as we mentioned before. The GT40 from Ford, or the Ford GT. Yeah. I mean, it's just cool to see these cars out there. These are obviously based on production cars.
Well, not only that, you look at what we saw this past weekend. You had two cars that we haven't seen in. Well, when's the last time they were here? Was they Sebring?
Sebring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sebring, and then you have four teams fighting for a championship in the GT class. There couldn't be less reason to watch the prototypes.
But here's the problem, though. If I was watching Speed TV, I didn't even see the last lap of the prototype. I'm sorry, the GT class. I did not see BMW's, celebration of the pits. I did not see any of the GT on the last lap, any of the GT class in the last lap. I didn't hear the commentators talk about, the various twists and turns in the past lap and a half or the last lap and a half. I mean, it was really a missed opportunity by Speed to, frankly, expose the most exciting thing all day.
Yeah, but you know what? We'll pick that up and we'll come to Bimmerfile for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, for some reason, there's this big push for P1 and P2 or whatever they're going to call it in next year. It's just, I don't think those cars have any value or meaning to me personally. I don't really follow those.
I mean, you know what? It was cool back in the 90s when there were multiple makes and they actually had to homologate those cars. And yeah, it was interesting. I mean, when the McLaren F1 was racing, for instance.
Right.
Or even back in the 80s with the Porsches and the silk-cut Jaguars and Toyotas and Nissans. I mean, there was just more than two of them out there. And now it's not relevant.
No, it's either you wrote for the Muscle Milk Porsche or what? I mean, there's nothing. It's just,
yeah,
it's kind of a dead circus, I think, over there. I don't know. And the other thing, too, is next season, so you're going to have BMW, you'll have Porsche, you'll have Jaguar, think Ferrari might be taking a year off. I'm not 100% on that.
Well, they're getting ready for their 458.
Right, and then you have this new Panos thing that looks like the Batmobile from, you know, drawn by a kindergartner, which will be racing as well.
Well, that's interesting because isn't the president of Panos also the president of LMS?
Yeah, and that's not a conflict of interest, no, is it?
That seems interesting.
So maybe, though, Gabe, maybe this actually might be beneficial for us GT class followers, because the president of Panos, who's also the president of ALMS, may want more coverage of his said car during the race.
Well, I will say something needs to change. I mean, the coverage was just dreadful. And I mean, I don't typically like speed unless it comes to their F1 coverage, but ALMS traditionally has been terrible. It hasn't been bad, but I mean, there's just so many gaffes.
They're trying to NASCAR it, is really what they're trying to do. They're trying to figure out a way to make ALMS NASCAR, and it's just the reason why I watch ALMS is because it's not NASCAR.
It's funny. I had a conversation with my dad about this, actually, talking about the I don't even know the series name anymore, but the Daytona prototypes, the ones that race at Daytona.
The Rolex.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing to me how irrelevant that series has become in such a short time since NASCAR took it over, and it's been templatized. It's boring. I mean, everything looks the same. I have no idea what I'm rooting for. Even the BMW M6 run by Turner is a tube frame race car that just happens to have an M6 skin over it. It's powered by an old BMW V8. There's no relevance there, and you look at what they do and then what ALMS does in the GT class, and I have to point to ALMS as saying, that's what I want to watch. That's the right way to do it. You've just got to hope that ALMS makes the right decisions going forward. They've got something. They've got something really interesting, and they've got fans coming to the races, and I think there's an opportunity.
I would agree with you. The only reason why I even care about the Rolex is I love Watkins Glen, and I love watching racing at Watkins Glen. And wouldn't, you know, the whole big issue be that NASCAR owns Watkins Glen, so ALMS can never race there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so the only time you get to see a BMW-powered product race there is with the, you know, the Grand Am or the Rolex series.
Yeah, that's a shame. Real shame. Well, anything else? I mean, obviously, we're going to have a little bit more about ALMS and the Petit Le Mans, but anything else you guys want to share about the weekend? Anything you can share? Because I know there's plenty
of people. Sure. There's a lot of drunk people in Georgia, and I think one of the off-the-race highlights of the weekend could be the fact that Matt and I witnessed a serious go-kart accident. Golf cart. And it just goes to prove that you should not drink and drive, no matter what it is, even if it's a big wheel. You not drink and drive.
No kidding.
Yeah, they literally drove off a cliff.
They did.
I don't know why I'm laughing, but
The thing is they drove off a cliff and then they ran to hide in the woods.
Oh, okay. I'm laughing.
Bleeding and injured,
but we're going to hide from, you know, people trying to help us.
That's classic.
Classic.
So let's move on. We'll talk a little bit more about the race, I should say the year. Well, of course, we'll talk about next year's car and some changes that are going to be happening. But let's turn our attention to the 1 Series, and I know this is near and dear to Matt's heart and my heart. We're both 1 Series fans.
Mm-hmm.
The 1 Series...
I'm not putting my chicken here. It's like chicken liver. I like the 1 Series in 128 form with the sports package, manual transmission, and
sunroof. I think that's really, really sweet of you and really romantic of you, but at the same time, I think it's crazy.
It's because it doesn't have a turbo.
Well, I don't like turbos. I really don't. But my point is that it's got an engine that has been, systematically neutered to produce only what it produces for marketing, and it would drive me nuts owning that car.
So open it up a little. Put a BMW performance intake on it. Put a nice little exhaust.
What am I gonna get? About 3.5 horsepower.
well, it sounds fantastic, and the car is like perfectly balanced.
Well, then I need to start taking out weight because that thing's too heavy. I like the idea of it. I really do. But I mean, my argument is if I would spend 30 grand, why would I not just go get a lightly, you know, an M3, E46 M3 with 30,000 miles on it?
But some people like that new car smell, Gabe. The new car smell adds at least $10,000 to $20,000 for the car.
I'll tell you what. I will shampoo every surface in your car, and I will only charge you $15,000.
For the shampooing?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm serious, though. The 128 is I like it. I'm sorry. With the manual transmission, it's an effective car. It's fun. It has feel. It's light. It's tossable for what it is. It's the lightest. I think it's the lightest BMW made right now. Could you imagine that?
And, in America, it is.
Yeah. And could you imagine it's actually fuel efficient?
But not by much, Michael. Not by much. The 3 Series is not that far behind it.
I think it's like 325 pounds or something.
I don't think it's that.
That's much. Something like that.
I think it's like 2-something.
Well, it's
well, here's my point.
So my fat friend Fred can sit in the car and, you know, it's...
My 330, my E46 330 is right around the same weight.
Same power.
235, more power.
More power.
And just, you know.
We're talking 2 horsepower, Gabe. I'm looking at a 230 horsepower car, putting my intake, my exhaust on there.
although Gabe, hey, have you seen how rare ZHPs have come to be in the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Finding a good one is tough.
Well, not even that. You can pick a 128 up by a European delivery, and it's cheaper than that ZHP.
And nobody else has driven it.
That's right.
Yours.
Oh, the ZHP can be had for quite a bit cheaper. But anyway, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Like, what I'd like to talk about the 1 Series. I mean, I think we like the 1 Series. I personally like 135. I'm a fan of a little bit more power. I like the look of the car. I like the wheels. I like just the package. But
M Sport gets you the same look.
Well, M Sport on a 128.
Yeah, because you're the same body kit. Well, you have to adjust for the wheels. You don't get the 18-inch wheels.
How much did you pay for that M Sport package then? That's my question.
What's it like? $1,500?
Well, I mean, you're inching closer to the 135.
But I don't want all that nose weight, Gabe.
It is. It's a lighter block. It's a magnesium block.
You just put weight in the back. Listen. You're talking to somebody who is always. I mean, when the old 330 was replaced by the 335, I moaned. I just said. I mean, Matt may remember this.
Yes, I do.
It's terrible. Like, why are they doing this? I mean, I don't care about the extra 30 horsepower. I want less weight. But the fact of the matter is, I kind of like the power now. I'm kind of addicted, and I think a lot of other folks are as well.
It's depressing.
I'll tell you what's depressing. The front headlights on the 1 Series.
Yeah, they are pretty sad.
So what BMW is going to do is, and this is new on MotorCom, they are going to have a late model LCI. They're going to refresh the front and rear lights on the 1 Series, and they're going to nip and tuck the interior, and they're going to debut it with the 1M in Detroit in January, early January. That'll be the public debut. And it's going to go on sale, I believe, shortly thereafter.
Well, January build, so yeah. Probably.
So not. Yeah, pretty interesting. I think it's definitely gonna be nice. I mean, I love the 1 Series for what it is. I mean, it's a small package. It's got a good amount of power, and in my mind, you know, it's as fun as the M3 in 95% of the time.
I'm holding out for a front-wheel drive version because everybody knows front-wheel drive 1 Series are better.
You know, I mean, you say that. I'm actually holding out for a left-wheel front left-wheel drive version. So it's just that front left.
So it can limp in circles?
Yes. So we'll have torque steer to the left always.
That's awesome. Very excited for that.
And so what do you guys think about?
We're not going to see that in the U.S. Come on, people. Get over it.
So what do you think about the 1 Series? I mean, speaking of the 1 Series, what do you think about the 1 Series, the front-wheel drive, the 1001 or whatever it's going to be called, What do you think about it coming to the U.S.? That's the rumor.
Not going to happen. So it's a lie.
You don't think it's going to happen?
No, it's not.
Not until my boy can buy one.
Yeah.
It'll be a while.
It's not going to happen. Come on, they have to vet that thing first in Europe and prove that it's not crap and then send it here. I mean, you're looking at easy 2016 at the earliest.
Yeah, that rumor's a lie. I mean, they'd have to have the vehicle on the road. I mean, between now, how long does it take to develop a new chassis, a new car, get it out on the road? I mean,
yeah, it's going to be 2013, 2014. I think that they will. I think 2016 is probably viable.
16, maybe. Not the rumor, the automotive news.
You didn't hear it here, folks. You didn't hear that the front-wheel drive BMW is coming in 2016 and not like everybody else is saying. You didn't hear it here, though.
Yeah. I love how we're always trying to just make sure we don't get in trouble. it's true, though. What do you think about the idea of the front-wheel drive BMW? I mean, this is of course, going to be a mini twin. And for my money, if I'm going to go out and spend money, let's just say $30,000 on a well-specced, really nice front-wheel drive small hatchback.
Not a mini?
I sure as hell am going to buy a mini. I mean, why would I not buy a mini?
I'd buy a BMW over a mini.
Well, but that's not what BMW does. I mean, if I want to buy a BMW, I want a rear-wheel drive car.
Listen, they have the Isetta.
You do.
Michael Isetta does. Was rear-wheel drive car as well.
But we're not the 80% that drives the 328 automatic
this podcast is not for that 80%. It's for the other 20%.
Okay. But the 80% is what keeps us 20% with cars.
That's true. They can sell as many front-wheel drive 1 Series as they want if they still give me my 1M.
Yeah, exactly. I agree wholeheartedly. They can build the freaking bus and call it BMW Bus Inc. as long as I get my car that I want. I don't care.
I mean, Why do people have such a hard time figuring that out, though? That's one thing that drives me crazy.
Because people are not edumacated.
They don't accept that there's a reality called, you know, we run a business that needs to make money. So the BMW has to make the choices they need to make to ensure that they have continued viability as a going concern.
Otherwise, you end up with a car company like Panos.
It doesn't exist. It makes garbage. I mean, you can't give us, who are, what, 1% of the buying population? Well, probably a little bigger in BMW's overall demographic, but everything we want, you just can't. I mean, you can try, but you can't offer that to us exclusively. You do that, and the other 80% goes and buys a Saab or a...
Why the hell would you buy a Saab? Don't get me started, Matt.
I did. I was hoping to get a rise out of you, but, I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
We're talking about Saabs.
I'm totally in agreement with you guys as far as the, you know, front-wheel drive BMW, that's fine. Sell the hell out of it. I don't care. Here's the thing. The two things.
It's not coming to the U.S. for a long time.
Here's the two things that bother me. Number one, what does that do to the brand? Now, if you listen to BMW, they had a very self-serving research project a couple years ago saying that 80% of 1 Series buyers just assumed it was front-wheel drive.
I wouldn't put it past those people.
The 1 Series owners?
No, if you...
BMW.
BMW owners. I'm serious. That's the reason why we don't have a damn dipstick anymore, Gabe. It's people are... not intelligent.
Well, it's...
They're just not as interested. They expect everything to be done for them, really.
Speaking of dipsticks, how much should I be concerned if I burn a quart of oil in between 12,000-mile oil changes?
No, not at all.
It's the first car I've ever owned that burns that much oil.
Revving it?
No. No.
You don't rev it high?
I'm actually driving it kind of like a grandma. I'm driving it pretty...
Well, that also could have...
Not really. I mean, I'm driving it, you know...
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing a lot of, like, cruising in it, sometimes it burns more oil because the rings don't expand.
ZHP. The 885 series burns no oil whatsoever. It's strange.
Yeah, no, I would not... I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, seriously, I go through a quart of oil every month.
Wow.
Yep.
Never had a car that did that. Interesting.
I mean, $16 a quart for all you people out there adding that up. It's ridiculous.
$16 a quart for the special M juice.
It's M juice, yeah, and it likes to drink it.
Well, if I was an M product, I'd like to drink the juice as well.
Yeah, exactly. But no, back to the front-wheel drive thing. In all seriousness, though, it's not coming here. It's not coming here for a really long time. It's going to be in Europe for people that want a hatchback. And do we have the hatch in the U.S.? Last time I checked, we didn't. And what it all comes down to is rear passenger space. You don't have that axle hanging out back there anymore, so you can actually move the seat back a little bit and introduce more trunk space. So when people are doing their comparison shopping and they see that, oh, the Golf has X amount of space, and then the BMW, and you got to remember, BMW is a direct competitor to the Golf in Europe because you can get cloth seats, you can get basically nothing in the car, and you still have a BMW. We don't have that luxury here, I guess you could say, of getting a stripper car. I mean, you're stuck with all the bells and whistles.
Well, and you need to remember, there'll still be a BMW, so they're going to... Regardless of whatever the complaints may be, it will still be a fantastic handling car. It will still drive the same way. I mean, it would seriously undermine the entire brand if it didn't.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to drive better than the Mini because, you know, BMW can't be worse than a Mini. So the next generation Mini is going to be crap.
So with that rationale, the Mini's going to be terrible.
It's going to be terrible.
7.5 years.
It's going to have a stupid white roof and be terrible.
All right. Well, I will wave the Mini flag and say, Michael, you're out of your mind again, just like you were with Saabs. And I think the Mini will be the car to own because it will be able to be true to what the front wheel drive chassis and dynamics are. Whereas BMW is going to try to mask that and create something that feels like a BMW, which of course means a solid feeling rear wheel drive car.
Where the Mini feels like a front wheel drive car that has a shimmy.
Well, listen, I don't know what you're hitting on your I know you owned a Mini for a time, and I'm not sure
for a while. I'm just saying like I just that's my problem, I guess you could say, Gabe, is how they're gonna differentiate the front wheel drive BMW from the Mini, and they're gonna be on a shared platform. And really, what are they going to do? Are they going to numb the BMW out? But then that's not a BMW. BMW has to handle well. But we all know that Mini has its go-kart and whip-tastic handling. So how are they going to dial in the two things?
No, it's interesting. I think it's going to be a lot of software, frankly.
A lot of software and different steering algorithms and all that great stuff.
Depends on the balance of the car. You know, the Mini's much more front-biased. If they could get a little bit... more even balance in the vehicle, maybe the BMW could have some better handling, even if it was front-wheel drive.
So now, like, let's think about the competition here. I just want to delve into this for a second. So BMW is the only rear-wheel drive car in its segment, and it gets beat up because of interior space and cost. So now that they're going to have a front-wheel drive, cheaper car with more interior space and all of that, do you really think that this car is going to sell like hotcakes in comparison to a Golf?
I don't. I mean, it's going to be more. I mean, this is going to be the luxury version of the Golf.
You think so, though? Because you can get a 116 stripped one. You know, stripped.
But it'll always be more. It'll always be more than the equivalent Golf.
So it would be a fair competitor then. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, would it be like a Renault or
probably what, an A3?
An A3.
A two-door A3 or a, you know, five-door or three-door or five-door.
Or the Mercedes equivalent, right?
That thing is such a piece of crap, it doesn't even count.
But that might be due for a refresh. So I mean, thinking out that's probably what BMW is looking at. It's like, who can we compete with and be more competitive? Because right now, the 1 Series in its cheapest format really isn't all that competitive, is it?
You know, it is in terms of driving dynamics, but, I mean, the people buying that car, I think, as you mentioned and BMW has alluded to, don't really care about driving dynamics.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I see where they're going. Now, that's Europe. Bring that to the U.S. Where is that even going to be?
Well, let me back up for a second. they care about BMW feel, and BMW believes they can create that with software. So that's the interesting thing. Now, the question is, do the folks in America, do they know what a BMW should feel like? Can they discern the difference between software and hardware, rear-wheel drive and front-wheel drive? Do they like the hatch? Do they not like the hatch? I believe hatchbacks. I believe that luxury or near luxury hatchbacks are going to be a huge part of the automotive landscape in the years ahead. And I think that it makes a lot of sense for BMW to start thinking about bringing this car over. Think about the Ford Fiesta. The Ford Fiesta, I know it's a low end, is outselling the Ford Focus.
It's a better car.
And, well, hold on. It's outselling the Ford Focus with basically loaded to the point that it costs more than the base model Focus. People are starting to get the point of a premium hatchback.
So is the Fiesta premium?
There might be a market there.
Yeah. I mean, is the Fiesta premium? I mean, how big of a dollar does that become?
I saw one yesterday. I was sitting next to one in traffic.
It looks good.
As I stood there in traffic for about a half hour. It was a red Fiesta with like off-white leather. And I mean, I got to look at the damn thing for, like I said, a half an hour. It looks like it could be a premium car. It looks that good. It's designed that well. As much of the interior, I mean, I've seen the interior. I've sat in the thing. You know, it doesn't feel incredible, but I mean, for the unwashed masses of the U.S. auto market, you know what? It's a lot better than what I've seen before as somebody buying cars under $20,000 in the U.S.
Yeah.
A lot better.
But now, would you buy that car if it cost $30,000? Now,
in the U.S., a Ford Fiesta doesn't have the cachet, but a BMW does.
So you would just be selling cachet then.
Well, of course. I mean, of course. That's a huge part of it. I mean, no question about it.
And they couldn't survive on the brand alone. They'd become no better than General Motors. They have BMW. I mean, maybe this is dilution through the Joy campaign, whatever it is. Instead of being the ultimate driving machine, it's just Joy. And now we have front-wheel drive watered-down BMWs. I can't accept that that's a direction that the guys that we know at BMW would allow the company to go, at least in the United States.
They're gonna fight tooth and nail to keep this thing out. I can guarantee that. I have a feeling some of them would leave the company before they brought a front-wheel drive hatchback.
At very least one that doesn't stand up to the heritage of what BMW represents as far as being a driver's car.
Yeah,
it's just hard for me to accept.
And that's why I think that story of whoever, Auto News or whoever it is.
Auto News.
Yeah, no. It's not happening. Good try, though.
I would argue that we will see it eventually. Do I want that? Absolutely not. But I think 2016-ish, to me, that's when we will. We'll see it after it's been vetted.
But
and by then, we'll have another fuel crisis. But, so it'll make perfect sense.
But why would BMW corporate, BMW USA even, or NA, see the need for that vehicle when they have the megacity concept and that will
it's a different
bring necessarily
market.
Their, it is a different market and it brings, but it helps them with their cafe. They have the mini scooter that will help them with, I don't know if they'll enter the cafe or not, but they have these other avenues to expand their brands and expand the sales of, you know, BMW or Mini branded product. I don't understand why would that be necessary, even considering over these last couple of years that with the financial crisis, in spite of that, continued strong support for BMW branded sales, while as a proportion of overall sales, buyers continue to move towards vehicles like the X3 and the X5. It doesn't make sense to me.
Term. This is not next year or the year after or 3 years from now. This is 5, 7, 10 years from now. And I think, Michael, your joke about the next gas crisis, yeah, that's probably true. You know, they're looking at this as you know, certainly a long-term plan. A front-wheel drive car is going to help with their numbers. It's going to help sell to a wider audience. It's going to really move the needle in a way that the megacity vehicle probably will not, at least for the next 10 years. The megacity vehicle is going to be an electric vehicle, for the most part, that is sold to people who can spend, God knows, I don't know, maybe 40 grand, maybe more, on an electric vehicle. For the folks who want to spend 28, 26, 25 grand on a front-wheel drive BMW, they don't even know what front-wheel drive is. All they know, it's a BMW. This is a very different car.
Yeah, I guess my hard point of this all is, how is BMW going to differentiate itself from everything else on the road that's front-wheel drive? BMW's big standpoint has always been that we're rear-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive's the best.
But those dogmas are breaking down. I mean, think about it. I mean,
Everything's converging. I know.
Right. Turbocharging.
Everything's looking the same. Everything's driving the same. Everything's being built the same. The quality's the same. Everything's the same. So you have to figure out a way to stand out. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I have a feeling that if they did bring this car to market, it wouldn't be front-wheel drive. It'd probably be all-wheel drive in the U.S. I really have that feeling. I know the platform's being designed to be front-wheel drive, all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And I think in the U.S. it'd solely be sold as all-wheel drive. And I think BMW, as a manufacturer, and looking at their economies of scale and numbers, is seeing a significant increase in their all-wheel drive sales, and their portfolio is being extended to meet those sales. I hate to say that the Snowbelt is supporting the brand. I mean, Audi is supported by the Snowbelt. And I have a significant feeling that BMW is also being supported by the Snowbelt in many ways, not even just in this country. I mean, we see now a 7 Series with all-wheel drive. We see an Alpina with all-wheel drive. Why would we offer a front-wheel drive if we're going to sell 4 of them? I mean, just look at the A3 and those things. A3 sales are 90% all-wheel drive. A4 sales, 95% all-wheel drive, such to the point that Audi is probably pulling front-wheel drive out of the U.S.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
You know, I think BMW can learn from, you know, what they're seeing in their current sales and project the future, and that's why I have a really tough time thinking that this front-wheel drive thing will come to the U.S.
Oh, that very well could be.
Yes.
There's no question about it. I think that's a really good point. I do think that the car is coming.
Yeah, no, it's going to come. It's just, if the market dictates it, they'll bring it. They've given us wagons for countless years, and you know what? They've never hit expectations, and they kept bringing them until we just recently lost our F11, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous car.
That is sad.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to probably not have one for the 3 Series either.
Yeah.
Or it will be all-wheel drive only, and automatic only.
You mean all-wheel drive?
All-wheel drive, automatic.
Yeah, you might as well not have it.
Yeah.
Well,
set in Mudville.
So that's our show. I mean, we've gone to two drastically different topics, ALMS and the 1 Series. Anything else you guys want to mention before we sign off?
We happen to have seen the X3 in the flesh for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's big.
It's a bigger car, and
it's very Q5 like.
It looks a lot like a lot of things we've seen before, I think is probably a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's the color or the environment.
Tiny.
Love it.
Really?
Well, they're, what were they, 18?
I don't even know what they were. They were tiny. There's up on the Flickr account. They haven't hit the site yet, but they're there.
It's a big car on modest-sized wheels, so they look like they're on casters.
Yeah, I do like the side profile of it. I love the sculpting of the front and the sides, but the
interior looks nice.
Everything is converging, and everything looks the same to me. I actually, honestly, my thought it was the new Kia when I first saw it. Not going to lie, you know, I thought it was the Kia Sportage because I've been seeing that commercial for God knows how long. And very similar lines. It's almost like Kia had a sneak peek of the, you know, probably spy shots and said, oh, we're going to make this car and just not put any texture on it. So very similar lines as far as the overall shape goes. But, I mean, the BMW obviously has a lot more to it, and it's a nice looking car. It definitely would probably benefit from a diesel motor and a trailer hitch to tow a race car, but otherwise, you know, what can you do?
Well, there we go.
And that's about it, Gabe. That's all I think we have. Matt, right?
I think that's about it. But yeah.
All right. Well, Bimmercast number 33. We'll be back next week. We're gonna be talking about, you know what, I'd love to dive into a few of the older models. I mean, we had a 5 series show a while back. I think, Michael, a 6 series show just for you would probably be appropriate.
I would be all for the 6 series show.
I would love to dissect the E36 3 series personally. There's lots of shows there, no question about it. But until then, this is good.
Michael Prost.
Goodbye.